The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Reunited and it feels so good. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, January 12th. Frank Stample joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Sure, we did an emergency Francisco Lindor podcast together last week, but now we get a full-length podcast. Chris Towers, how's life, buddy? Dual sport analyst nowadays. Look at you, big time.
Yeah. It's been, I've been on vacation, so I've been, you know, taking a little, working like one day a week. It's been nice, you know, to finally sleep in. Or not go to sleep at 4 a.m, I guess, would be the more accurate way to put it. And, playing a lot of video games, trying to get better at Warzone, just putting in the hours, grinding, try to get my K to D up.
Like you, I played some video games while I was on staycation, but a much different genre. Donkey Kong Country 1, the remake. Nice. For the Switch, which is, I know you own a Switch, so if you want to play that, feel free to, I would say rip all your hair out, maybe rip all your beard hair out.
It is so hard.
It is so hard.
I was
hard.
Hanging out with some friends, and we decided to like just kind of pass the controller around, and that game is absurdly hard.
It's so frustrating. Scott's here. What's up, Scott?
Hey, I am here. I am. How are you?
I'm
Texas
doing...
Rangers hat you're wearing today.
Oh, yeah. This was a Christmas gift to myself, and I'm hopping on the bandwagon a couple of years early, maybe a couple of years late. I always loved Willie Calhoun. Hasn't really happened for him. Big fan of Dane Dunning, so happy about that. I also love Nate Lowe, so I don't think they're going to be very good, but I think that I'm going to like watching a lot of Rangers games this year. So, boom, Texas Rangers hat, de facto fan. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about a lot of ADP risers and fallers. I mentioned that Fantasy Pros now has their ADP up, and as soon as I say that, I'm jumping back to NFBC ADP because something that's unique about NFBC ADP, the National Fantasy Baseball Championship, is you can sort it by time frame, by dates. So I look back at ADP from October 1st through November 30th, which were very, very early drafts and maybe had some recency bias right after the season ended, versus December 1st through now, January 12th, mid-January. So we're going to compare some of those risers and fallers. And I thought I'd just start with this, get it right out of the way at the top. Chris, we all kind of bashed your love for Giancarlo Stanton last year. I think me more so than anybody else. So apologies, but he is someone who is
no
falling.
Need to apologize. You guys ended up being right on that one last year.
Well, I guess all in all, yeah, he got hurt, but he did things differently in the shortened season that actually kind of has me buying in, and definitely at this cost because he's one of the guys where his ADP is dropping. He was ADP 118 during those first 2 months, October and November, when drafts were going on, and since December 1st, he is 131. And I just don't really understand this drop because he played 18 of 162 games in 2019. His ADP last year was around 65. So he played 23 of 60 games in 2020. Actually got better, hit more line drives than ever before, chase pitches less than ever before, best swinging strike rate of his career. Basically, you know, was a better version of himself. And now he's going 60 picks later than where he was going last year. And he's also going 70 picks later than Aaron Judge, which I have no idea why that is, Chris. So you look at their Steamer projections, Judge 247, 36 homers, Stanton, 250, 40 home runs. And Aaron Judge's ADP is 58.
Stanton's is 130. This just kind of gets to the point I was making all offseason last year that there is discounting for the risk of injury, which we are, I think it is right to do with Giancarlo Stanton at this point. And then there's everything else that's dropped him another 70 picks here, which is, I don't know. It's either he can't stay healthy, which we know isn't true. Like he can, it may be unlikely, but he can play baseball. Or it's he's not that good anymore. And I think that's, you're double penalized. He's being penalized more than he probably should be. And I would be saying that if he was going 80th overall right now.
Yeah. I have him 74th. So I guess I agree. It's absurd. He's going as late as 131.
It's a perfect buy low. Like this is at 130, there's no risk. Like if he doesn't give you anything, your 130th pick is probably not going to give you anything anyway, or there's like a 50% chance that you're going to drop that guy. And so it just, I don't know. It's an overreaction. And I think an obvious place where there's value. Like you look at some of the hitters that went around 130 last year. And it's pretty hit or miss. Like starting at 125, you got like Michael Brantley, Franmil Reyes, Kevin Biggio, Danny Santana, Tommy Edman, Kyle Schwarber, Yuli Gurriel, Carlos Santana. What about half of those guys were like worth starting? Maybe less. That's the perfect spot. That's the Corey Seager spot last year.
Could it be because he's DH only? I don't know how NFBC's amended its eligibility, but on our site, he's DH only to begin next year, which is something new for him.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just, I mean, that's still a bad reason. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton is one of those players where I wish there was just an easy way to combine the regular season and postseason stats. So, you know, I don't have to come in with the math already done because he hit 10 home runs in 30 games this year.
That's pretty good.
Six of those were in seven postseason games, but nonetheless, he hit 10 home runs in 30 games between regular season and postseason. So, I mean, obviously he's still got it.
I've seen no reason to believe that he can't at least be the player he was in 2018. And in 2018, he was the number 24 hitter overall in fantasy. Like I said earlier, it's an overreaction. And a perfect place to, you know, take him 110th and you'll almost certain, well, not almost certainly, it's Giancarlo Stanton.
Nothing is certain.
But it's a very good place where you can find some obvious profit potential.
Yep. And that's the beauty of fantasy baseball. You could be in on one, you could be in on a player 1 year and not in on them the next year. And it's based on, this is a value-based game that we play. And if I'm going to get Stanton at that type of discount, although I have bashed him in the past, he did make some improvements this year and I mentioned some of that. And yeah, this is just, especially going around this range, there's no other players you're going to find going later than 120 who have like 40 to 50 home run potential. You're just not going to find that. So that's an easy one for me. An easy buy for someone who is falling down draft boards like right now, which I just don't understand whatsoever. Weren't really a lot of news and notes today. A bunch of rumor stuff, which I'll bring up, but there's not really anything concrete to talk about. The Nationals have engaged the Reds about an Eugenio Suarez trade, but are unwilling to part with either of their top prospects, Jackson Rutledge or Cade Cavalli. So, I mean, the Nationals have been making moves. They traded for Josh Bell. They signed Kyle Schwarber. If they did manage to get Suarez, that lineup is already pretty damn good. So something to pay attention to. That was reported by John Heyman. The Braves are expected to have Austin Riley open as their starting third baseman this season. And he's another one who's actually on the move right now. And over the past month and a half, his ADP has jumped from 246 to 115. To 215, sorry. So he moved up about 30, 31 spots. Scott, I know that I believe earlier in the offseason you talked about Austin Riley, and I believe you are excited about him. Is that correct?
Yes, I am, because his expected stats were actually really impressive last year. Trying to pull them up here on the fly, but they were really impressive, I can say for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you just even without the expected stats, you just look at what the baseline stats. Like, he cut his strikeout rate to 24% from 36% the previous year. He improved his walk rate. He cut his infield fly ball rate. Hard hit rate was a little lower, but average exit velocity was a little higher. Max exit velo was right in line. I think it just points to a guy who probably made the adjustments that you wanted to see, even if the overall stats didn't reflect it.
Yeah, 23.8% was the strikeout rate, which is pretty good. I mean, it's certainly not a bad strikeout rate.
It's for basically average at this point.
Yeah, for somebody with the kind of power potential Austin Riley has. So the expected stats, they weren't quite as good as I was thinking, but still, he hit .239. The expected batting average was .262. He slugged .415. The expected slug was .471. It was a huge step forward that wasn't reflected in the base stats, as Chris said. And obviously, as goes for every player who did something in 2020, you can apply the small sample caveat, but I don't think he's going to enter 2021 with much sleeper hype. And I think that makes for a true sleeper, obviously. Yeah. When there's a trendy sleeper, he's not so much a sleeper anymore, right? That's kind of an oxymoron.
And by the way, when I said 23.8% strikeout rate is basically average, it's not just like not bad for a power hitter.
Yeah.
The league average strikeout rate last season was 23.4%. He was basically an average strikeout hitter last season.
Which is night and day from where he was as a rookie. I mean, he struck out over 36% of the time when he first came up, took the league by storm. This is Austin Riley, hit 14 home runs the first 2 months that he was up in the majors, and then just completely plummeted. The strikeouts got the best of him. He didn't have enough time to make adjustments back to the league. And I like the fact that he's a young player. He failed. He kind of worked on things, and he bounced back, and he really did correct that strikeout rate. So, The average exit velocity was up. He hit the ball harder in 2020 than he did in 2019. Very excited about Austin Riley. He's someone who's moving up. He's moved up about 30 spots, but that is one that I can actually get behind. Scott, going right around him right now in ADP are a few other third basemen, Brian Anderson and JD Davis. Who would you rather have, Riley, Anderson, JD Davis?
I'm not ready to completely abandon my JD Davis love from this time a year ago. He regressed in a lot of ways. His profile changed in a way that doesn't really support that enthusiasm anymore. But, a lot of profiles changed dramatically in 2020, and we're not willing to believe in all of them. So, I'm not as high on JD Davis as I was at this time a year ago, but I'm not ready to say I was wrong about JD Davis either. So I still have him ahead of Austin Riley. Checking here how far apart they are in my rankings. So strictly for Roto, I have JD Davis 183 and I have Austin Riley 235. So, pretty decent gap there with about, it looks like there may be three spots apart in my third base rankings.
Yeah, I think Austin Riley's upside might be higher if he can couple this new approach with some of the power that we saw in 2019. But I still do like both, but I think I prefer Riley of the two. The Blue Jays have checked in on Chris Bryant, so we'll monitor that situation. The Red Sox are shopping outfielder Andrew Benintendi, and apparently, Chris, your Miami Marlins are interested
in Andrew Benintendi. Miami Marlins are interested.
Yeah. Are you interested?
Great. Sure.
You're interested in Benintendi?
I mean, for fantasy or for the Marlins?
Both. I don't know.
Look, anytime, his value will almost certainly never be lower. I don't think he's just completely lost the talent that made him so appealing over the last few, before the last 2 years. So, sure, buy low. He's coming off an absolutely abysmal 14 games, but I don't know. He could still probably be an average to above average player. And, you know, in fantasy, maybe a 15-15 guy. It's, you know, I guess I would want to see what his ADP right now is, and it's 227. That seems fine. That seems like a worthy late round gamble.
Yeah, especially if you play in Roto or something, you could get him as your fourth or fifth outfielder that late. Yeah. Still just 26 years old. It feels like he's been in the league forever. He's still super young. But I looked this up. 152 games since the start of 2019, a 255 batting average, 751 OPS. So he's been rather average, struggles against lefties too in his career, 691 OPS against lefties. We'll see. Maybe a change of scenery would be good for someone like Andrew Benintendi. And last but not least, according to Bob Nightingale, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred informed clubs on a conference call Monday that they, quote, should be preparing for spring training to start on time in February and to plan on a full 162-game season being played. Let's go, Scotty.
Well, of course they should be preparing for that, because otherwise they're going to get caught not prepared for that if it does happen. So this is kind of a nothing story, but at the same time, what I find interesting about this is, you know, some of the commentariat, I guess, is saying, it's dangerous to do it before everybody gets vaccinated. And yet it's the players that are pushing for this to happen. Like the league can't mandate the season start later. It has to be an agreement, and the players want to get paid for all 162 games, even if that means playing all 162 games. So I think it's probably going to happen, but you know, there's still a chance it couldn't.
It's really annoying that they're doing this again, where like, has there been any reports that they're like actively trying to work this out right now? Are we going to get to like pitchers and catchers are supposed to report February 18th and they're trying to work things out on February 15th for the first time, like they were last year? Like
yeah, it sounds about right. It sounds,
I hope it's 162 game season.
I hope so as well. And yeah, I'll remain optimistic. Just a natural kind of skeptic the way that I have always lived, but, I will remain optimistic here. Hope that we can get it in. But, I mean, between the pandemic going on, obvious, you know, issues between the MLB and the Players Association dating back to last season, and obviously they have things to resolve over the next year or so, it's going to be tough. And especially if you just see what's going on in other sports right now, too. I mean, the Cleveland Browns just won a playoff game without their head coach, NBA games being postponed left and right. So it's a really tough time. We're really like in the height of the pandemic right now while people are trying to be vaccinated. So We'll continue to monitor it. Hopefully, we'll cross our fingers that we get a full MLB season. Chris, we have some breaking news you just informed us about. What do you got?
Yeah, Liam Hendricks has signed with the Chicago White Sox. James Fegan reported it first, White Sox beat writer. So there you go. He is he the number one closer in ADP right now?
Mercy!
Shout out to Hawk Harrelson. We got to get that in there for the White Sox, making a huge move. Liam Hendricks. I think Hader is still being drafted ahead of him, but let's find out.
Yeah, he is.
Hader is going over the past month 59 in ADP, and Hendricks is going 71. So yeah, about 12 spots difference. Scott, does this really change anything for Liam Hendricks? He joins a pretty good team, a team that's ready to compete, good offense, solid pitching staff, should have plenty of save opportunities, and he made me look foolish last year. I think he made both of us look foolish, Chris. We were kind of off Liam Hendricks. We weren't buying it, but he's been ridiculous. So, Scott, I mean, is he just like a bona fide top three closer?
Yeah, definitely. You know, he was able to maintain the increased rate of missing bats and actually improved on his numbers during his breakout 2019 season. He was awesome for a second straight year, and you don't get, you know, the shelf life for closers is so short, you don't get much more assurances than that usually. So I'm pretty sure he's my number two ranked reliever behind Hader. And I think he's going to stay there. I don't think his potential for earning saves is any less with the White Sox. They did have an in-house candidate in Aaron Bummer, who would be a pretty interesting closer target if they didn't go out and sign a more proven guy.
So what you're saying is it's kind of disappointing for Bummer that he won't get that opportunity?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know why you went so far out of your way.
Because you would have thought I was going to say it's a
misdirection.
Yeah, it's a classic misdirect.
Okay. All right. I feel you.
Scott, you and I both have Liam Hendricks ranked as our number two closer in Roto, and I would imagine it's probably the same in head-to-head points, but of course we know that saves are much more valuable in category leagues than they are in head-to-head points leagues. I guess the fallout from this is Alex Colomé has to find somewhere else to pitch now. And I mean, he's kind of tiptoeing around where like his underlying numbers are not very good, but he continues to get the job done. And I've been so skeptical of Alex Colomé the past couple of years, but he continues to get it done. I assume some team will probably sign him to like a cheaper one-year deal and he'll be their closer. But if the A's do not make another move, Chris, it seems like Jake Diekman is the leader in-house to earn saves, and I've seen a few reports on that recently. So if anyone's drafting right now, Jake Diekman is the closer for the A's.
Yeah, just a reminder that Hendricks was the first player to lead the A's in saves in consecutive seasons, I think, since...
Oh, we did this last year. Who was it? Grant Balfour? Yeah, yep, it was Grant Balfour, yep.
Like 12, 13 years ago? Yeah. I mean, in looking at ADP, I guess we're back to drafting closers in the top 100, so... no, thank you. I will be passing on that.
It wasn't that long ago that Balfour led them in saves back-to-back years.
Like 2013 and 14, maybe?
Okay, yeah, no, it was 2012 and 13. Yeah, but you said 12 or 13 years ago, and I was like, wait a second. Balfour wasn't around that long ago.
I think I get partial credit for that. Yeah, like he probably should be the number two reliever. I can't imagine I'm going to draft him at all.
Me neither.
By the way, he was around 12 or 13 years ago. He just wasn't saving games. That was for the A's. That was more recent.
Thanks for the clarification there, yes. Scott. Yes. Chris mentioned partial work. Always show your work. You know that, Chris. So
yes.
All right, ADP movers. Let's look a little bit closer on this. I mentioned I compared a bunch of data from the NFBC from October 1st to November 30th versus ADP from December 1st to January 11th to see who's rising, who's falling. And I had you guys choose a few names, mostly Chris. But let's start off with one of these, and we'll stick with the closers. And Craig Kimbrel, he has moved from 235 to 192.8, now climbing inside the top 200 picks. And if you don't want to spend an early round pick on a closer, Chris, Craig Kimbrel can be your guy. I assume that he's going to be the Cubs closer. I don't know how competitive they will be and how many save opportunities they'll have. But his final 14 appearances, 1.42 ERA, 0.87 whip. That was after he allowed a run in each of his first four appearances. So really, really calmed down after that early season mess from Kimbrel.
Yeah, and it's basically his last two seasons have been a disaster if you just look at the underlying or the top line numbers. But 2019, he didn't sign until late June through no fault of his own. It's not like people thought he was bad. It was just that Major League Baseball teams decided they didn't want to give out draft pick compensation that year. And so he didn't get going until July. He pitched through a knee injury. And then 2020, like you said, he had four bad outings to start the season and was awesome after that. I'm not going to say Craig Kimbrel is Craig Kimbrel again. You know, the guy who was, you know, looking like one of the best closers of all time before the last couple of seasons. But he's, I think, pitcher 70 in ADP over the last month, maybe 69. And that just feels like an obvious, that feels like an easy win. Like that drafting him there, just it seems like another obvious place where there's value to be gained. Maybe he's just done, but I don't think we have enough data to make a strong conclusion on that. And so, yeah, Craig Kimbrel around the 15th round will be a big target for me.
I'm always curious what the impetus is for such a move like this up the ADP. I mean, we're talking more than 40 spots, and what news has led to that? Because the I think the reason people were skeptical of Kimbrel at first is, as well as he pitched down the stretch, and maybe they didn't notice because they were looking at the overall numbers, but even if they did notice, like, the Cubs didn't give him the job back, even as he was performing well. So what are they going to, what role were they going to put him in 2020? And all I can see that's changed news wise is the Cubs have sold Yu Darvish. You know, it looks like they're selling off pieces. And I think it was it Chris or was it you, Frank, who we were talking
was
about?
Was it a smart point?
Then it probably was
probably Frank.
It probably wasn't me.
Kimbrel, if the Cubs aren't compete, if they're in sell mode, Kimbrel's entering the last year of his contract. So it would actually make more sense for them to make him the closer to try and put him out there as a trade chip. They should anyway, because he's their best reliever. But I think, I don't know, maybe people have more confidence they're going to do that now.
Let's talk about Drew Smyly and another one where ADP around 247 the first couple of months. He signed in November, so maybe there wasn't enough time for people to react. But since December 1st, ADP 205.7. And for Smyly, not a lot of volume here. He only pitched five or more innings in two of his starts or appearances, because he made seven appearances, only five of those were starts. But the strikeouts were awesome. The velocity was up for him. He changed his pitch mix. He uses curve more than ever before. Scott, he is joining your Atlanta Braves. Are you excited about what you saw in Drew Smyly? Because this seems like a different Smyly than we've ever seen before.
I mean, why not? I can understand why his ADP's gone up, because I don't think it was clear him entering the free agent market, especially having pitched, like, I think most of his starts were less than five innings with the Giants. So they didn't handle, they weren't giving him a normal starter's workload, and it wasn't clear that a team would sign him to be a starter, but that's obviously what the Braves wanted him to do. And yet, as much as the ADP has risen, he's still going outside of the top 200. So the investment is basically nothing for a guy who, small though the sample was, I believe K per nine of 14.4 would have been top five among qualifiers, I believe. And swinging strike rate would have been top 10. And, you know, the fact that his velocity jumped 2.5 miles per hour after being removed from Tommy John surgery a certain period of time. I don't know if those short starts were helping him throw harder, and maybe it's all going to come crashing down in a full length season. Maybe he won't be able to stay healthy again. But when the investment is nothing and somebody makes that big of a splash, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of that tiny sample of innings Rich Hill got at the end of the season with the Red Sox before signing a similar deal with the Athletics. And there were a lot of doubters then. And he went on to have a really good second chapter of his career.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me more of?
What's up?
What? Sean Manaea last season.
Yeah. Except we saw Manaea's velocity drop during that stretch versus right, Smiley.
He was
going
higher
up
than Drew Smiley's currently going.
Yeah. Well, he also had more of a track record, but that's fine. I mean, maybe it won't work out, but we're outside of the top 200 here.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Drew Smyly ended up, or Sean Manaea ended up like 180 last year, and there were times when he was going like 150. I just worry Drew Smyly. Like, I don't know. If it's 200, sure. If it keeps rising, I don't know. He's a 32-year-old.
He's turning 32 in June.
32-year-old.
Yep.
Who had 20 has had 26 and a third good innings in the last five seasons pitching in San Francisco. I don't know. There are lots of late round pitchers who could get strikeouts. I don't know. It depends. It depends whether it's late or mid round pick, I think, is the thing. But I'm not going to get excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, Scott mentioned outside the top 200. So for now, it's still late, but it could continue to creep up. I think we're probably dealing with just a roto-only pitcher here, maybe head-to-head categories as well, because, Scott, I just don't think we're going to get a lot of volume out of him. Hasn't pitched more than 114 innings since 2016. So I don't know where the Braves...
he wasn't very good back then, is something to remember too.
I don't know where the Braves are going to get all their innings from if they're talking about limiting Mike Soroka early on, and if we're assuming that Drew Smyly isn't going deep into games. Like, they need to get innings from somebody, so...
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a lot of safe bets in the 200 range at starting pitcher,
no,
so I will sell out hard for the upside, and I feel like Smiley's somebody who presents more than most going in that range.
Yeah, he does, especially strikeout upside, but probably a roto-only play for me, and unfortunately, you could see Scott he packed his Christmas tree away. That's fine. I mean, it's mid-January. It's probably about the time of year where he should, but we have a new guest on the podcast. Chris's cat has been appearing on here, and if you want to see...
She's been biting me.
All today. Of our mugs,
so
or...
you can see me reacting to that during the podcast if you want.
You want to see Chris's cat attacking him? You can certainly do so at our YouTube. That's youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. Make sure to subscribe, and... continue sending us your questions. We have a few questions we'll get to later on. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. But if you enjoy FBT, feel free to leave us a 5-star Apple Podcast rating and drop a question in the review. We'll be sure to answer it here on the podcast. Much appreciated as always. All right, so we got through Drew Smyly, Craig Kimbrell. We talked about Austin Riley, Giancarlo Stanton. All right, we got to do it. It's time. We've gone this long in the offseason. We haven't waxed poetic about my guy, Joe Musgrove, someone who I feel like I've become synonymous with. And he's kind of frustrating, actually, because I've rostered Joe Musgrove a lot in my fantasy baseball career, and he has not lived up to the hype. And he's already climbing. He's climbing up to a spot where it is already probably too high for Joe Musgrove.
It's ludicrous. Yeah. It is ludicrous.
His ADP.
He is going 80 spots higher than he was last year.
Yeah.
In NFC ADP. It's ludicrous.
Yeah. As of now, since December 1st, he is at 127.9. That's up from 143.8 in October and November. So Joe Musgrove is on the rise, and I know why. He teases us every year towards the end. His final five starts, he was awesome. 2.16 ERA, 13 K per nine, 1.8 walks per nine. The fastball velocity was up. He had a 16% swinging strike rate during that time. Scott, is that enough for you to buy into Joe Musgrove as a pick inside the top 130 right now?
No, I buy into him as a pick inside the top 180.
Yeah.
I feel more excited about him than I was at this time a year ago. I know there were some people making the case for him then. To me, the changes... I mean, look, his last two starts, he looked like Yu Darvish. And I know it's just two starts, but like, has there been a two-start stretch in Joe Musgrove's career where he did anything like that, getting all those whiffs? I venture to say there has not. He didn't have a double-digit swinging strikeout game the previous 2 years, and then he got two in a row. So, I'd like to be able to invest in it. He's always had great control. If he's going to be this bat misser, you know, he's going to be efficient. He's going to get pitched deep into games. If he's going to be a bat misser, you know, anywhere close to what we saw in September, then he's finally going to live up to that hype. But yeah, 120. I mean, let me see kind of pitchers I have in that range. I have like
Joe
Mike
Musgrove,
Soroka.
If Joe Musgrove ever has like 8 good starts in a season, he's going to be a first round pick at this pace.
I have like, I have like Charlie Morton and Patrick Corbin in that 120 range, who obviously have done, you know, I don't know. I mean, you look at the way Charlie Morton finished last season and compare it to his longer track record, and obviously, that's more deserving of a pick in that range than Musgrove is.
I like Musgrove. I think there's talent there. So much depends on his velocity, his fastball velocity. He's so much better when he's around 93, 94 versus anything lower than that. And he started the season, he was around like 91, 92. And then, of course, when he comes back, the velocity is up here. So I like the pitcher. I think eventually we're probably going to get something really good from him. But if he continues to rise, it's just too rich for me. And that comes from someone who really likes Joe Musgrove. The last name I wanted to mention as a riser, and we I don't think we've talked about him at all, Scott, this whole offseason to this point, Lourdes Gurriel. He has moved up about 12 spots in October, November. 92.5 is the ADP since December 1st, 80.6. And over his last 162 games, Lourdes Gurriel, 285 batting average, 35 home runs, 9 steals, an 855 OPS, average exit velocity over 90 miles per hour in each of his first three seasons. In 2020, lowered his strikeout rate 4%, career high line drive rate 25.9%, expected to bat third or fourth in an improving lineup. It's a pretty high price tag, but I think it's warranted. I people are talking about Teoscar Hernandez and how excited they are over him. Like, I think just in a vacuum, I would take Lourdes Gurriel over Teoscar Hernandez because I don't have as many concerns over the strikeout rate and the plate discipline, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he cut down the strikeouts as much as he did, the fact that he had an elite hard hit rate, which it was pretty high in 2019. But the thing that really made me skeptical of Lourdes Gurriel at this time last year, and, you know, he had a lot of believers, but I was a skeptic because it was just such a short, he had this incredible hot stretch in the middle of 2019 that kind of made his numbers what they were. And he wasn't that good apart from that stretch. So I the fact that he bounced back and had, you know, was able to do it again over a couple months' time, was pretty reassuring to me. And I think I can get on board with everybody in thinking he's the real deal. Now, where exactly does he fall among other players who are the real deal? I have him 104th. So it looks like this NFBC consensus is a little higher than me. I'd be curious what outfielders they had.
So, like, here's one that stands out to me. Austin Meadows is going behind him. That feels like an overreaction.
And I love
I would rather have Austin Meadows than Lourdes Gurriel.
I love well, Austin
I
Meadows
I can't
this
say
year.
That looking at my rankings. I hear you. I get that. But I'm pretty down on Austin Meadows because I'm not exactly sure.
Boo,
I'm
Scott,
not exactly
boo.
Sure where 2019 came from. It was just kind of...
Well, I would say is he was one of the guys... His season got started late because of COVID last year, right?
Yeah, and then when he returned, he dealt with an oblique injury.
That feels like a really good excuse. And we were, you know, he was talked about as a, you know, what, probably a top 15 outfielder.
Yep.
He was this time last season. He was going 41st overall on average last year. So, I don't know. I feel like we all said, let's not overreact to 2020, small sample size. And then Lourdes Gurriel's ADP jumped 80 spots from last season and Austin Meadows dropped 53. Mm-hmm. And I just like Austin Meadows has done the full season version of this, actually a much better version of it.
Yep. And I like both.
I mean, I wish he played for a different organization because I don't trust the Rays to give him an honest chance to bounce back to 2019 production either. But, you know, and part of it's just, I didn't really know what to say against Austin Meadows at this time last year. So I just kind of went with the flow on him. And this was pretty disastrous. Maybe it was a good excuse. Maybe not. Like I said, we're kind of just playing hunches, which makes it fun. It makes it more fun to analyze fantasy baseball this year than in recent years, because you're going to get opinions all over the place. But my opinion is to give a wide berth to Austin Meadows.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned. I really liked him last year. I get it if you don't trust the player, but he's going to be 25 years old when the season starts. I don't think the Rays are going to kind of mess around. I think they're going to let him play every day. And if you look at his lefty-righty splits in his career so far, 837 OPS against lefties in 2019, 921 OPS against lefties in 2018. I think he's proven that he can.
I will say they didn't let him play every day this past year.
Yep.
So
I just don't think he was ever healthy, but that's
maybe so.
We shall see. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to talk about a few players who are falling in ADP right now. We'll do that here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
At some point, the ageless wonder Nelson Cruz was going to fall off a cliff. But he hasn't done that yet. So why is he falling in ADP? Is it because he doesn't have a job? Maybe. ADP in October and November, 88.8. Since December 1st, 103.1. He's dropped about 15 spots. Chris, I see you shaking your head over there. You're smiling.
Every year. Like, here's a hot take that probably isn't that hot. Nelson Cruz is probably the most valuable player in fantasy baseball history in terms of the surplus value that he has added to fantasy baseball teams over the course of his career. I don't think there is any player who has been more underdrafted every single year, and every single year he is one of the best hitters in fantasy, and every single year his ADP drops, and it makes sense. He is 40 years old. He may be done, or maybe he will be done at some point this season, but we haven't seen it yet. And at some point the skepticism around him at some point has to stop. I don't know. Like, maybe it's because he's DH only. Maybe it's because he hasn't signed. Maybe once he signs, he'll move up. But if you can get Nelson Cruz at 105th or whatever we're talking about here, It seems like such an obvious win, and we do it every year.
The one thing I'll say about Cruz, I think, you know, most people avoid him because he is so old. They want to be 1 year early rather than 1 year late. You know, they don't want to be stuck with Nelson Cruz on their team the year that he just completely plummets, because it's probably going to happen at some point, unless he's just David Ortiz and he just continues to mash until he retires, which I guess is a possibility. But 53 games this year, we did see, you know, he was dinged up. He started to deal with more injuries. He only played 120 games in 2019. Strikeouts went up a little bit this year. 27% was a career high for him. 46.5% ground ball rate, career high for Nelson Cruz. And while his batted ball data, according to StatCast, was still very, very good, it was not on par with where he has been the past couple of years. So I think those are some of the things that people might be looking at, Scott.
I don't.
You still like him?
I have him. I am 58th. So, like, I think when he signs, I think the biggest reason he's fallen from where he was is because he hasn't signed yet. And that's making people nervous given his age, and given that if there's no DH in the NL, it's very limited selection of teams to look at him.
That's probably true.
But when he does sign, he'll go up. I don't know if he'll go up to where I have him at 58th. Probably not, considering he was starting at 88th. But I don't think he'll be on this fallers list for long. I don't think that trend of him falling will continue for much longer.
Yeah, I mean,
but even then, he was still a good value before he fell. Mm-hmm.
The thing that's so interesting this year more than ever before is, like, we were talking about other util only players. You know, Yordan Alvarez last year was like a second, third round pick, and of course, he has all the injury concerns. His ADP the past month is 87, so you don't really have to invest nearly as much. And I mean, he's a lot younger, and his upside is probably...
His knees may not be, though.
They are. He might have Nelson Cruz's knees, actually.
Yeah.
There's that for him specifically, but for DH-only players as a whole, like, last year it was basically just Yordan Alvarez and Nelson Cruz. So
yeah,
if you got one, you were blocking the other, but that's it. This year, it's so many players. It's Alvarez and Cruz. It's Giancarlo Stanton. It's J.D. Martinez. It's Jorge Soler. It's Willie Calhoun, even. I may be even forgetting.
Fran Mil Reyes. Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Those are the only relevant ones, I guess.
Now, that's still not a great way to approach it, because most of those guys, I think, are going to become eligible at a position soon enough. It's only going to take 5 games in season. Maybe it'll take 6 weeks, but eventually, for most of the season, I think most of those guys you'll be able to play somewhere else. And yet on draft day, when you're looking at just one utility spot, you know, if you draft any one of them, you're not going to be able to draft another one of them. And you're not going to be able to do something like draft, I don't know, a third baseman or something like that. So it's, I get why it's kind of having an effect on all of them together, but it's still, it's too much of an effect.
Let's quickly talk about two young starting pitchers who are sliding right now. And I mentioned, you know, some of the fallers were younger pitchers who maybe recency bias, as soon as the season ended, they remembered, you know, how electric Sixto Sanchez was when he first came up. But now he is sliding, ADP from 118 down to 132.7 over the last month. And I think people are kind of looking at the lack of strikeouts here, and that kind of what is driving this fall for Sixto Sanchez. He had that double-digit strikeout game, his second start of the season, his final five starts, 6.3 K per nine, 3.3 walks per nine. So Chris, our resident Marlins fan here, what do you think about this slide for Sixto Sanchez? If he continues to fall, would you be willing to invest?
I mean, yeah, I think his current ADP 132, it's not just the strikeout rate. It's the fact that this is a guy whose career high in innings is 114. He's coming off, you know, obviously a season where he threw, 50 total innings, including the playoffs. But obviously there was more during the, you know, it's hard. Like, you can't just say, okay, he threw 50 innings because he was pitching during, you know, the time leading up to it. But there are innings concerns for Sixto Sanchez, and there always have been. There have always been durability concerns for him as a prospect. And the strikeouts just have never been as impressive as the scouting reports would make you think. In the minors, he was usually an above average strikeout pitcher. He was one of those guys where K percentage probably told you a better story than K rate in the minor than K per nine, just because he was routinely running a whip around one, if not lower. And so that drove his K per nine down. But he was never posting the 30% strikeout rates. His high in the minors was 25%, and usually more like 22 to 24%, which is good but not great. It's roughly average. But he, in the minors, was elite at limiting, you know, the bad batted ball results. And he was very, very good at that in his first trip to the majors as well. Thing that stands out for me, always elite at inducing infield fly balls. And last season in the majors, 16% infield fly ball rate. That's really good. Coupled with the fact that he had a 58% ground ball rate. He could be, I think the ceiling is probably like a Mike Soroka or, the really, really good version of Dallas Keuchel. And there's always the chance. I mean, there's no question the stuff can get whiffs. He actually had a pretty good whiff rate, 12.8% swinging strike rate. It's just he throws to contact.
12.8, and that's versus like Trevor Bauer had 12.9.
Yeah. But he throws a lot of sinkers. And so, you know, he is someone who, with a different pitch mix, could be a better strikeout pitcher as well. So I think there's upside potential. And I think there's a pretty high floor for him. The only issue for him is innings, I think. So I don't think he should be falling, but I think his ADP probably makes sense at 132.
Yeah, I think coming off the season, people kind of just remembered the hype around him, and that's why he was being drafted so early. So I think this is kind of like a natural fall for Sixto into an area that makes more sense. But he's dropping into an area right around Joe Musgrove. So, Chris, would you rather have Sixto or Big Joey?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have Sixto. Yeah, I'd rather have Sixto. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised you were hesitating as much as you
lambasted
the move up to Musgrove to this range.
Yeah, once I start thinking about it, I think there's a similar floor. I think the only thing is innings.
Yeah.
But it's not like Musgrove been a particularly efficient pitcher in his career. He's never averaged six innings per start.
Well, overall, it's not like he's been a good pitcher. I don't see how things go that wrong for Sixto Sanchez, because he's already dominant on two of the three most important skilled areas, preventing home runs and limiting walks. I mean, he's an elite strike thrower.
Yep.
And I probably give him a better chance than you do of becoming a strikeout pitcher, but I don't think he needs to live up to this ADP, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's kind of just like a flashier version of Kyle Hendricks when it's all said and done, which wouldn't be bad. I mean, Kyle Hendricks is a very fine pitcher.
I was thinking baseball. Jose Berríos. I think he could be very similar to Jose Berríos as well.
Yeah, just with much better command. I don't know what happened with Berríos' command this year. That was weird. The other pitcher I wanted to bring up was Tristan McKenzie, someone else who we might have some concerns over how many innings he's going to provide in 2021. But a big fall here, Scott, from 159 down to 201 since December 1st. So he's penciled into Cleveland's rotation as of now. He's dealt with a lot of injury concerns. You see the body type. He's very skinny. So maybe that kind of lends itself to more injury risk. But can you find a reason why he's dropping as much?
The only thing I can figure is that Cleveland just traded away their best player, Francisco Lindor, and what is their lineup going to look like without him? They've lost Carlos Santana this offseason too. It's looking like a pretty raggedy lineup, and you're wondering, is the run support going to be there for McKenzie? I suspect that's why people are cooling on him. What's interesting about this is I recently re-examined my initial ranking of McKenzie relative to where I was seeing him go some of the other places and decided I needed to move him up. But you said he's moved down to what? What is his ADP more recently?
201.
201. And what was it before?
159.
Yeah, so I moved him up to 163. As a young pitcher, and particularly a young pitcher who's had durability concerns, it's hard for me to imagine coming off the season that was that he gets much more than like 100 innings.
Steamer has him for 136, which is probably optimistic.
Yeah.
Although he did throw 143 in 2017. Now his, arm started to fall apart the following year, but well, actually it was like, it wasn't just his arm, right? He had like, it was like a back injury, I think was the primary.
Yeah, upper back cost him all of 2019, which,
but I don't think he ever had Tommy John or anything.
Not in recent history, if he did, and you may be right that he hasn't at all.
He's awesome, though. Can we just say that? Like, Tristan McKenzie was awesome. It was a small sample size. It was 33 and a third innings, but 12% swinging strike rate, 35% chase rate. He has four different pitches that he uses at least 10% of the time. Scott, he was really damn good.
And then there's the issue that which pitchers in this range do you trust are going to get a full allotment of innings? I think guys who've done it before at the major league level, you can probably trust to do that. I'm sorry, who?
Ramon Marquez will.
Yeah, sure. But he's probably not going to be as good inning for inning.
There are some
that would, but the thing is, if you're trusting them to get the workload and you're trusting them to be as good as I think McKenzie's going to be on a per inning basis, they're going much earlier than this. So it's just a matter of what you value most.
I could see him being as good as Denelson Lamet. I think it's actually a pretty similar profile. McKenzie, Lamet has his own injury concerns. And they approach pitching differently. Lamet is just two pitches and he throws harder, but high fly ball rate, tons of strikeouts. I think McKenzie probably overall has better established control, at least in his professional career. I think the upside is really that high, though. Like, this was the guy that the scouting reports and minor league numbers told us he would eventually become.
Yeah.
There was nothing after that. I know it sounded like I had, like that was a comma, but it was actually a period.
We're two for two. That happened on yesterday's podcast as well, where I thought Scott was going to continue. He's like, nope, that's it. That's the end of the sentence. McKenzie, I think once you get into that part of the draft, right? With some of these younger guys and you have concerns about, just kind of load up your bench with as many of them as you can. And just like, while they're healthy, while they're pitching, even Drew Smyly, like he's not young, but we have workload concerns. He's going to be really good, I think, in the innings that he does pitch. So,
yeah, no, that because the way the innings are limited for them, if we're expecting them to be limited, is probably not going to be okay. They work straight through to that limit and then they're just shut down for the rest of the year. There'll probably be these like phantom IL stints. So maybe when one guy goes down, you could turn to another. But that's kind of like that. That's just to get like to broader approach to the draft. That's I'd rather do it that way, where you're getting a handful of these guys for your bench or maybe your fifth SP spot. And like, if you're relying them up for your third and fourth SP spot, you probably waited too long to fill out your pitching staff, because like, there's just it drops off because we don't know how the innings are going to play out after nobody got much work last year.
Yep.
The trustworthiness at the starting pitcher position, it drops off even more abruptly than it did last year
or
any other year.
150 really good innings has never been more valuable in fantasy than it has been in recent years. And I think that will be more true in 2021 than ever before.
Yeah. And how many pitchers have we said this about already? Workload concerns. And we're going to continue to say it. So if that's the case, that means everybody's going to be limited except for the top tier aces who we've seen do it before. And I think that's especially why this year more than ever before, I am more likely to take two pitchers in the first two rounds, just going pocket aces, taking two of those starting, two of my top 10 pitchers. I've done a few, like three different NFBC drafts already. I usually come out with like three starting pitchers in the first five rounds. And because of that recency bias on hitters, you're getting a lot of established hitters in those middle rounds later than you should be. So
I mean, you can get Nolan Arenado in the third round in most drafts right now.
You start with
if you can get pocket aces and Nolan Arenado,
exactly.
That kind of sounds pretty good.
And that's exactly what I've been shooting for. Like two pitchers, you get one of either Arenado, Rendon, Bregman. They're all going in the third round right now. Yeah. Take another pitcher in either the fourth or the fifth, then just load up on all these guys that are, you know, being undervalued. Gleyber Torres in the fifth round, Carlos Correa a little bit later on, Javier Baez is a name, JD Martinez, Giancarlo Stanton. There's just so many names. Austin Meadows, who are just going in that middle round range, where just a couple years ago they were being drafted inside the first two, three rounds. So that's a little bit of my early draft strategy that I've been looking at. We'll wrap up with some questions here. This one's from Luke in Anderson Island. I'm the commissioner of a 10-team Dynasty Points League. We roster 350 to 390 players and keep all players in perpetuity. Jack Flaherty is my pride and joy, especially with the emphasis on pitching in points leagues. However, I was offered Dustin May, Mackenzie Gore, and Victor Robles for Flaherty and Gallo or Alec Manoa, who is a pitching prospect for the Toronto Blue Jays. So give up Flaherty and Gallo or Manoa for Dustin May, Mackenzie Gore, Victor Robles. What do you think, Scott?
Well, even though he's still young and formerly an elite prospect, and we still can't say for sure who he's going to be, I'm treating Victor Robles in a 10-team points league as virtually valueless at this point. So let's kind of just remove him from the equation. And you're mainly, because I don't put much stock in Alec Manoa, so you would trade him over Joey Gallo. So you're mainly looking to Dustin May and Mackenzie Gore together make up for Flaherty. Keeping them all on equal terms, and considering it's a league this shallow where the standard for impact is so much higher, like I'm not sure Dustin May is ever going to meet the impact standard for a 10-team league. I think the chances are pretty good, but I'm not sure he will. I don't think I'd do it. I think Flaherty is clearly the most valuable player here. He's still young. You're keeping him at the same cost as those other guys, and it's a 10-team league, so you really need to make sure you get the impact players. He's the one who's already there.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're looking to rebuild, maybe you consider it, but Flaherty's still just 25 years old, so he's young enough, and we've seen him dominate already, so I would stick with Jack Flaherty myself. This one's from Dan in Wisconsin. I'm in a Dynasty Head-to-Head Categories League. This is my second year playing, and I took over a horrible team. Barring a miracle, I won't be contending for a championship. We're required to keep 8 to 10 players. Is it worth keeping Chris Sale, or should I move on? He sent me his entire roster. And if I were you, Dan, I'm definitely keeping Kyle Tucker, Mackenzie Gore, Julio Rodriguez. You're going to have to wait a little bit for these guys. But Pablo Lopez, Sandy Alcantara, Jonathan Villar. Those were six that I found that I thought for sure. But after that, I think Chris Sale should probably be considered. I think he's in that mix. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you keep Sale. Hope he comes back from Tommy John surgery relatively strong this season. He should be back by mid-season, right? His Tommy John surgery was at the first spring training, if I'm remembering correctly.
They've mentioned June or July as a timetable.
Yeah, so you're hoping he comes back and shows something before whatever your 2021 trade deadline is and you move him for something.
Yeah, I'm surprised you picked Jonathan VR as somebody to obviously keep. I know it's a categories league, and I know there's been some talk of him re-signing with the Orioles. If he's back with the Orioles and that's a team that could offer him consistent playing time, then I'd agree. But if he's not back with the Orioles, I don't think there are many teams out there that are going to offer VR the kind of role he'd need to be of much value anymore, except as like a late round steal specialist.
That's definitely fair, Scott, but Dan sent me his team and
it was bad.
it wasn't the greatest team, but you know what? He admitted it himself, so I'm allowed to agree. Aroldis Chapman is one of his players on it, so you probably want to keep Aroldis Chapman as well in this format. But yeah, taking a look here at like Griffin Canning, Carlos Santana, I mean, there's not a lot of other players here that I think. Bobby Dalbec, yeah, not really excited about any of those guys. All right, yes, you should keep Chris Sale. Listen to Chris Towers and if he performs well, try and flip him for another young piece at your trade deadline. All right, that's going to wrap it up here for Scott and Chris. I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching. We will be back on Thursday. On Wednesday, you will hear Danny Vietti and Will Middlebrooks. We'll be back on Thursday. Bye-bye.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.